Okay, 1 Corinthians 1, we said a lot about verse 20 last week, so we'll read verse 20 again, see a couple more things about that, and then move down into verse 21 as well. This is where, in fact, throughout 1 Corinthians 1, you'll see it in chapter 2 and even in chapter 3 to some degree, Paul talks about the wisdom of the world. And when we look at our society, there are a lot of people who, as far as what we would say earthly wisdom, it's kind of in the category of common sense. Maybe there's a better description for it. I'm not quite sure what that would be. But there are people, as far as the ways of the world, they excel in that. They do very, very well for a lot of reasons. And maybe it's because that's where they're focused, or maybe that's just where their minds are naturally geared. But Paul asked the question, and we looked at these individually. He says, where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? And then 21, which will be new material, for seeing that in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom knew not God, it was God's good pleasure through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. Where I want to pick up is with a quote that I didn't give you last week. One source suggested that Paul, and this is a quote, had in mind the kind of wisdom which knows well how to get on in this world and how to amass the treasures of this world, but has no knowledge of the things that matter. Thinking about that definition, would you say that we have a lot of people in our society who would direct their life in that way? As far as the matters of this world, they're knowledgeable. Here's how to get a good education. Here's how to use that education. Here's how to get ahead in life. Here's how to have a nice house. Here's how to have a nice life. Here's how to build a nice retirement. They've got all of the, you know, the things moving in the right direction. They fill themselves with that worldly wisdom, and yet that gets them at the end of life where? Yeah. I mean, you have lived your life well as far as the world is concerned, and you've done well. And when it's time for the funeral, they would say, well, he did well. You know, he did this, and he did this, and he was a hard worker, and he accomplished all these things, and he accumulated, and he had and had and had. But the one thing that's so missing in the obituary is what? He, she, they, not a Christian. Someone who did not obey the gospel of Christ. So Paul is going to continue to hit this, as I said, in this chapter. We'll see it again in verse 26. You can see it especially in chapter 2 and verse 6, and then even in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 18. Then as you start looking at verse 21 as well, you've got some additional information about man's wisdom and man's philosophies. Paul says that if we have that human wisdom, that human understanding, and some of that can be very, very helpful. But if that's what we have and that's all we have, we don't have a knowledge of who and what? God. So human wisdom can take you so far, and in some respects it can get you some good things. But it's not going to get you to God. When you look at our world, and this has always been true, we've had some great thinkers. We've had some wonderful philosophers. As you go back and you start looking at people like Einstein, I mean, the intellect of people like that, you're thinking with the technology that you had in your day and time, the law of relativity, and other things, how did you figure that stuff out? I mean, it's just phenomenal that they were able to make some projections. You think about the progress, for example, that the ancient Egyptians and others had made. It is really unbelievable. But that line of thinking is not going to take you to God. Now, when we think about God, we've talked before a little bit about the fact that when we deal with God in Revelation, that there are two kinds of revelation from God. There is what might be referred to as general revelation, and there is what we might refer to as special revelation. Anybody want to try to identify what one of those two things are? General revelation, what is that? Or special revelation? And we're not talking about the last book in the Bible.
In general, I think of Romans 1, that the power of God seems can be observed by things he's made.
Sure. You start seeing the orderliness of creation, you know, the heavens, the earth. We've got plenty of water. We've got all the things that we need. We've got a planet that's perfectly balanced. We're just the right distance from the sun. A little closer, a little further away, we would cook, we would freeze. We think about how the body is arranged. You start looking at that, and you look at a computer, and you say it just didn't come into being by chance. Someone had to design it. Someone had to create it. I've heard in recent years with some younger people, they ridicule, and I'm a little surprised at this, they will ridicule that design argument. But that's a problem. Do you remember from the book of Hebrews? The Hebrew writer says, for every what is built by someone? Every house, remember that? Every house is built by someone? What's he arguing? If you see the house, yeah, there wasn't a hurricane that blew through a lumber yard and all of a sudden, you know, you got the outlets in there and everything is all framed up and the shingles are on. Nobody would believe that. If you have the lesser designed, then certainly when we deal with the greater, it should also be designed. Okay, so Brian hit the general revelation. What's the special revelation? General revelation is that you can look around and you can conclude that there is a designer. Now, you might not know a lot about him. You might conclude that, what about him? You look and you see the creation, the heavens, the earth, the human body. What might you conclude about the creator? At least tentatively.
Power.
All right. I think you would have to say we're dealing with some degree, maybe not all power, but certainly he can create the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth. He has or it has some power. What else?
Talking about a specific event.
Thinking about if we can look at creation and see a creator, what could we conclude, at least likely, about the creator? He's powerful?
There's someone greater than me.
All right. I have some understanding of my power, my ability. I certainly can't create this stuff, even if I... had existing matter. There's just no way that we can be shaping stars and planets and moons, galaxies, those kinds of things. So,
be there before everybody.
Yes, we would, I think, be able to infer that this creator, we don't know if he's eternal, but we would certainly say that he's kind of got to be way back there. So that would be another fair inference. Anything else?
Intelligence.
All right. There has to be some degree of intelligence. Again, we may not know exactly how far that goes, but we would say that it is definitely superior when it comes to intellect. Anything else? What about love, compassion, kindness? Could we infer possibly those things from creation? Well, everybody likes two legs, right?
It's all I know.
It's all we know. But if you think about hobbling, not a good illustration, I'll probably go down, but hobbling along through life on one leg. Not the best design, right? But you know, when you put that second leg down and you feel stability and you can run, you can walk, and you can do some other things, and you look at that design and not just one eye straight there in the middle of the head, but you've got two eyes. It seems like everything's balanced. So if we've been created, what would that suggest about the Creator? What kind of body has He given us? Yeah, can you imagine a three-legged person? That would seem to be, three-legged stool might be a good thing, but three legs for a person. So when we start looking at what we have, we can at least begin to draw maybe some firm or, at worst, some tentative conclusions about the Creator. But those are all general points.
I think when you said that, I wanted to say, yes, I can see the love, but I also know people who I have heard say, yeah, he made us, but he also made all these things that happened to us, that people die early. There's the good, but then there's our also. And so I'm thinking of someone in particular right now who, has a hard time because of the things that have happened to people or happened in the world.
Okay, that not only leads us to our next point, that drives us to the next point. If we've got that general knowledge of a creator, that there does seem to be some force out there, has intellect, has power, and at least seems to have some desire to do good for mankind, but we've got some lingering questions because we do find some evil in our world, then what are we going to be searching for? We're going to be searching for what kind of revelation? Not the general revelation, but we're looking now for the special revelation, which is going to be what?
Words.
We're looking for some communication from this being. If you have made us, if you have designed us, it's like the old space alien. If there are aliens out there, people say, well, we want to hear from him. We want to have contact. If there's a God out there, we want to know about him. We want to have contact from him. And people have made various claims as far as this book or that book, and we can go and begin looking at those documents to see whether or not any of them actually match up with the facts. So when we think about human wisdom, it can take us so far, but there are some questions it can't answer, right? What's impossible for human wisdom to answer?
Why?
Yeah, let's deal with the why questions. Why what?
Why did a 4-year-old boy get cancer and be dead within a year?
Well, okay, I would back up even further, but we could ask that.
I mean, you know, there's lots of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Why did God create us?
Yeah. Why am I here, right? Isn't that one of the big questions? And then you can get a little further down the path, Julie, and you can start asking, okay, if we can figure that out, then why has he allowed this or why has he allowed that? But why does everything exist that exists? And do I have a purpose? What is my purpose? Why am I here? And not only why am I here, but what's another question? Where am I going, right? Now, there's some people who don't believe that they actually exist, but setting those folks aside, if we believe that we actually exist, then a natural question is, we have seen the process of death. And then the question becomes, is there anything after death? Is there anything after this life? And those are questions that human philosophy simply can't answer. You find some great thinkers saying, well, we can, you know, kind of figure out death as far as what happens to the body, but as far as where people go, if there's anything, as far as an afterlife, we simply can't answer those questions. But if we take that general revelation and we tie in that special revelation, then we can deal with some of man's most probing questions. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little bit more? Okay. Paul says, as far as this information, the wisdom, this is coming from verse 21, the wisdom of God, it did not know God, its philosophies, all the things that it had accomplished, that's not going to lead you to God. But God wanted to disclose this information, and how did God make it known? The text says he made it known through... Okay, some translations would say preaching, and we'll just combine those. God made it known through the message of preaching. And as Paul talks about that, he adds another point. He says he's made it known through preaching that's associated with what? At least in the eyes of the world. He says the preaching is foolishness. When we hear the word foolishness, what comes to mind? That's foolishness. What's foolishness?
Lack of sense.
Oh, okay. Lack of sense, that's a good definition, Sherman.
What are you doing?
Yeah, you know, why would anybody choose that? That doesn't make any sense to us. It seems silly. You know, just go on to something that makes more sense. The word that's used here, as one source defined it, describes absurdity, extreme folly, or even stupidity. And we saw that back in verse 18. Looking at this as we were kind of talking about in our last class from the standpoint of the world, if you have a message that every single person who is at an age where they're accountable, every single person needs to hear. And if they don't hear it, and they don't obey it, there's going to be a punishment inflicted upon them without end forever and ever. How are you going to make that message known? How are you going to reach out to people and convince them this is something that, number one, you need to hear, this is, number two, something that you need to obey, and number three, if you don't hear and you don't obey, something worse than you can ever imagine is going to be happening to you for a very long time. How do you convey that message?
You give hope.
Well, okay, I think that's where you would begin. You can say, one person, as far as a human being, we can't do it on our own, so we're going to need help. And the way things have been set up, that's true. We've got a lot of helpers. What else would you do? This is the most important message in the world. How are you going to get the message out? All right. I think that's probably going to be step number two. We're going to have to figure out some way to teach it. Now, if you take those two steps, what would number three be? How are you going to teach it? What would the options be? Well, could you teach it in a school? You could. And that might work in some places as we look at our world. Because of how it's set up, it's probably not going to work well, and hasn't worked well in some other places. How else might you spread it?
Door to door.
Yeah. You're thinking, we need to probably engage the personal approach where we get some additional people and we go out and we have people fan out and they just start spreading the word and just take it person to person, place to place. They are committed to that message and they do their best to spread that message, not for a day, a month, a year, a decade, but for every single day. Now, if you do that and you deal with people, I'll take your hand in just a second, Steve. How are you going to be received in some places? They're going to say that message is, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Go away, we have no interest, and we've seen those responses. But this is the way that God has set up this message and the means that he uses to get it out to the world, that is, through the people we talked about. Steve?
Well, we got tracks, correspondence, broadcasts, internet, all those different kinds of media.
Yeah. through God's providence, we have developed some additional means where we still have the opportunity and the obligation to go person to person, but now one person can reach many more folks rather than just the old style of door to door. I mean, it used to be, we remember the sales calls from people, right? They're not, I think, quite as bad as they used to be, but your phone number is being called by who knows who at all kinds of hours, and people are trying to sell you stuff. Cold calling is often not very effective. I mean, it can be, I mean, I don't know, Sherman, did you have any exposure to cold calling or not with your work? Okay. Anybody ever do any cold calling? All right. Steve, you want to tell us a little bit about what happened with you?
Well, I've never been a salesperson per se, but I guess you say you got to sell what you did otherwise. In that way, but I worked for True Green Lawn, and I called people cold to see if they wanted the service. And I got some hateful people who were slamming the phone on me. Probably 8 of 10 calls were that way. You know?
Yeah.
So that's why I said what I said. Yeah.
But if you're the lawn service, what do you want from your employees? You want them to go out and knock on everybody's door or call everybody they can call, right? Because you have a message, you have a service. You want to get the message out, we're the best lawn service, whether that's true or not. Anyway, that's the message that you want to promote. And you want to sign up customers. Well, a similar thing is true when it comes to the spiritual realm. And thankfully, we have some options besides cold calling. We had somebody mention, I think in the last class, Noah. You know, he's out there preaching. He's out there involved with building this ark. Do you think that people thought that he was foolish? Based on what they had seen, they'd never seen a flood. Noah had never seen a flood. And that would not have made a lot of sense to people to say, well, you can see the water. One day water's going to cover the whole earth. And you're going to be destroyed if you're not in this big boat. Yeah, I think that had to be the reaction of a lot of people. I mean, we know that they rejected it, but it had to be to them a joke. You are an idiot. You are a fool. And God's people have been doing the same thing, not building the boat, but as far as the preaching, and doing that for a long time, and people have repeatedly said, oh no, it doesn't make any sense. After death, though, they realized that they were very, very wrong. Paul says that preaching pleases God. Now let's think about that for a second. Would you say that preaching in and of itself pleases God? Or is there more to it?
Correct preaching.
Yeah. I mean, it's like saying, go paint the house. If somebody tells you or you give permission for somebody to go in and paint the house, what are you not authorizing, even though you might not specifically say it?
Whole plan.
Oh, okay. You know, what if the guys, anybody see the Q Club? A picture of the Q Club that showed up in the Colorado shooting? But we've heard about it, right? On the outside, if this is a picture, I happened to see an article where they looked like they were about 8 different colors. Yeah, pretty much. It was like, you know, you got the red and you got the blue and you got the yellow and the green and kind of like if you go to some beach communities, what do you see as far as the paint on a lot of the houses or the ice cream shop? Yeah, you find that we got the pink, we got the red, we got the wild colors out there. All right, so if you say, paint the house, and you don't give them too many additional details, generally I think you probably give them the color of the paint or supply the paint, and they give you, you know, 10 different colors, that's going to be contrary to what we want. Or if they go in and they just decide to fire up the spray gun and, you know, your paintings are left on the wall and you've got your wall hangings and everything else, and they just spray over them. You know, that's not what you want. That's not what you mean. So when we say that preaching pleases God, we're not saying that all preaching pleases God. It needs to be preaching which is consistent with what we find in the scripture. The emphasis is not on being a public speaker. It's not on spectacular presentations. It's nice if you have those things. The emphasis is on the message. It is the message which was delivered once to the saints, Jude 3. It's the pattern of sound words, 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 13, and it is the sound doctrine. Now, if that's God's plan and that's God's standard, knowing what we know about men and the devil, would we expect that there would be people who would not follow that plan?
Yes.
Yes. And what have we seen as far as deviations from the plan? Or what would be some possible alterations to the plan? God says, I've got this message. I want it spread out throughout the world. We talked about how to do that. How might men try to change that up in a bad way?
plan of salvation.
All right. They might preach the wrong message. They might say that message is offensive to the world, and we've seen some of that as far as New Testament Christianity. So let's take this off. Let's add this. And then with these tweaks, it will certainly be more acceptable to a wider audience. So that would be one way. What else?
The denominationalism of teaching whatever this one believes and that one believes.
Okay. We'll cater to you. There have actually been some groups which have gone out and surveyed the community. What do you want in a church? That's what we will deliver. Anything else?
Man.
All right, let's just use the word entertainment.
Okay.
We have found that there have been some groups who, as far as, let's get away from the preaching stuff, that's old, that's too traditional, that's boring, so let's go out and let's have some entertainment. What about some political talks? Do we see that in some religious groups today? We do.
Women taking a bigger role.
We find some alterations as far as not just what's said, but who is saying it. In this particular case, we have some female preachers in mixed assemblies. We've got all kinds of discussion groups, a lot of things that are really contrary to the process. As you look at the end of verse 21, Paul says the God's good pleasure through the foolishness of preaching to them, to save them that who? To save them that believe. The preaching that's done, it should cause people to believe. And believe in what? All right, to believe in the gospel. That's the power to salvation. People, and if you preach long enough, you're going to have some bad sermons along the way. You teach long enough, you're going to have some rotten classes along the way. But there are people who, if they have access to a pulpit, they will have an axe to grind, and they're going to do that on a regular basis. It might be a place where people come to seek to give advice. They might come and offer a lot of personal opinions. They do about anything other than preach the word, and that is a problem. Anything that you want to add or ask before we say a little bit more about the end of 21? Okay, if Paul says, and he does, the preaching is designed to save them that believe, what's that tell us about the number of people who are going to be saved and lost? And I'm not looking for a literal number. Is anybody going to be lost? To save them that believe. Ask. I'll make this additional point, and then we'll take a look at 22 through 25. When Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1, he says, preach the word, and anybody remember what comes after that? Be instant when? In season and out of season. What's the in season and out of season mean? Okay, that's good. All the time.
No matter what life circumstances are.
All right. And if they want to hear it, great. And if they don't want to hear it, well, it's not quite as great, but you do it during those times as well. So this is God's tool to please mankind, and we can see it replicated in a similar way with the things that we talked about in the world. Okay, last time, anything before we pick up with 22 through 25? Okay, he says 1 Corinthians 1:22, seeing that the Jews ask for signs and Greeks seek after wisdom. But, he says, we preach Christ crucified, unto Jews a stumbling block and unto Gentiles foolishness. But unto them that are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. God, when you look at the Jewish people, did he provide them with a number of miracles throughout their history or not? Yes, he provided them many, many miracles from the time of Moses, really until the time of Jesus. Now, there was a 400-year or so silent period when you get to Malachi up to the New Testament area, but they, for the most part, had seen tons and tons of miracles. Now, if you are a people, be just like some things today, if you know you are accustomed to something, you know, for example, we've talked before sometimes about sweets and treats. If you are accustomed, let's just use Thanksgiving. If you are accustomed to having a turkey with all the trimmings at Thanksgiving, and you've been doing that for 30 years, when year 31 comes, as far as Thanksgiving, what's your expectation?
Same.
All right. And if you don't get the turkey on year 31 and you don't get all the trimmings, how do you feel?
Letdown.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a letdown because that's your tradition. That's what you're familiar with. Now, if you are the Jewish people and you can reach back and you can see all that history from the time in Egypt and God working out in the wilderness and God doing great things, delivering his people from his enemies and, you know, the king, Saul, David, Solomon, and the other kings and some interesting things with the prophets, and you've got this rich history, then when you come along, you're an adult, you're serving the same God, what's your expectation? We also want to see some, we also want to see some miracles. And the Jews were certainly hungry for that with that 400 silent year period. All right, so John the Baptist pops onto the scene. And you think some Jews were probably really interested in seeing some miracles from him? They were. But John didn't do any miracles. John's just preaching. Now, I say just preaching because that's probably how the Jews saw it. I mean, here's this guy, he's got some powerful sermons and he's saying some really good stuff. And he certainly looks like he's kind of one of the old-time prophets, but he doesn't have any miracles. Well, Jesus is about 6 months behind him, and then the Lord starts his ministry. And if you heard about this Jesus, first thing that might pop into the mind would be what? Well, if John didn't do any miracles, and now we've got this other guy, let's see if he's doing any miracles. And if he's not, then something is probably really, really odd. Well, the Jews, let's take a look at Matthew chapter 16 and verse 1. This was probably not true of all of them, especially those who received some kind of help from Jesus. But there were Jews, especially leaders. You have them identified in Matthew 16, verse 1, as the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Text says that they came and they were trying him. They were tempting Jesus, if you will. They asked him to show them a sign from heaven. We've talked about that before. Anybody remember what that means? We want to see a sign from heaven. What were they asking for? Yes, let's see you make the moon spin around, you know, the star, or let's see the stars jump, and you know, those kinds of things. Yes, I think that's a really good way to describe it. Let's see you do something up there that is unusual and a special kind of sign. Now, they're also interested in, you know, what we might refer to as regular signs, regular miracles, earthly miracles. And now Paul, as we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 22, what do we find with Paul's work, and we would assume the work of the other apostles as well? Paul says, seeing the Jews, what? They ask for signs. Well, they came to Jesus and they said, we want to see signs. Did Jesus give them signs? All kinds of signs. And the greatest sign was what? Coming back from the dead. I mean, that's about as good as it gets, right? So Paul, he goes out. And, you know, by the time he writes the Corinthian letter, you know, Jesus has been back in heaven for at least 20 years. This letter is written. The Jews, they surely have heard about Jesus. Paul goes out and he's preaching the gospel. And these Jews say, hey, if you're an apostle, if you really have this power from God, show us what? Show us a sign. Give us a miracle. Give us something that we can see. Now, that word which is translated sign is used about 75 times in the New Testament. There are actually multiple words for miracles, and each one has a little different connotation. You have signs, and you also have wonders, works, and miracles. Paul uses that word, that same word sign, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 17. There it might be rendered token to prove that he really was from God. You've also got the word being used in the book of John, John chapter 20 and verse 30. And Jesus, as far as that word being applied to him and request for signs, you could see that in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 38, plus that verse I just read, Matthew chapter 16 and verse 1. Even Nicodemus used that word in John chapter 3 and verse 2. So there were cases where these were offered and offered in abundance. You've got that in John chapter 12 and verse 37. But it's like today. People say, well, prove this to me. If you show me proof, I will believe. You show them proof? Did they believe? No. And it's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, you say it's in black and white. I mean, I can't give you any more proof. This is it. Here's the documentation. Here's the picture. Why will you not believe it? Well, I just don't. Well, what kind of answer is that? That doesn't make any sense. And I mean, if you see this guy, you see someone and you say, I have no doubt that this guy is being afflicted by a demon. Or I have no doubt that my son is blind. Or I have no doubt that this person is dead. And you raise the dead. You take care of the demon. You restore the sight. You restore the hearing. You restore the fellow's health, who is the lame guy. He's not able to walk. He's never been able to walk. And you see that with your own eyes. And yet you say, well, I just don't believe. What can you do with a person like that? You really can't do anything. Because they have so hardened their mind that there's just nothing that you can possibly do is bad. So it's just a strange quirk of humanity. Anything that you want to add or ask on that point? Okay. We've got this word sign, and those signs help coordinate the preaching. We've talked about that a few times as far as the book of Acts. If you have someone come to town and he says, I'm a preacher from God, I'm going to tell you what God's will is for your life, might you be a little skeptical? I think reasonable people would say, okay, maybe I'll come out and hear you. Come out and listen to you and see what you have to say. And you bring out a family member who has some serious medical issue. You've lived with the family member for a number of years and you know that the medical issue is not being faked. And the preacher says, hey, I see that you brought someone with me and there is, from what I can tell, a medical issue. You know, the person has lost sight in an eye or the person is unable to walk. And then you go up and say, I want to cure that person after, you know, we have a service. Now, if you were to hear that from somebody, what would your thinking be?
How?
Huh?
How?
Well, yeah, I'm thinking how might be a real good question. What else might you be thinking? How would you do that? What else would you be wondering? Yeah, I think that's going to be another key part of the answer. I'm really curious. Now, you've made this claim. Are you going to just, you know, get up and wave your hands and it's just going to be an excuse and when it fails? I'm not sure you have the power, but I'm at least curious. Do you think you'd stay and listen to the whole message? Yeah. And if the message makes sense, and then afterwards the guy comes up, and not like the denominational people today who are fakes, the guy comes up and maybe says, you know, you remember me? I said I'd come back and I'm here. And I'm going to show you the power of God. In the name of Jesus, be healed. And the eye is healed, the leg is restored. Whatever the problem is, the medical issue is cured just like that. So they have heard the message. Do you think that they would have listened intently? They might have been somewhat preoccupied, but I think that they probably, at least for the first time, would have given you a hearing and said, I'll at least listen and see if the person makes sense. And if they do, and then you come up and it's no nonsense, it is just in the name of Jesus, he's the one I was talking about earlier, remember? In the name of Jesus, be healed. And the person gets up, the person says, I can now see with both eyes. I can hear you. Whatever the miracle was. What do you think for a person who was sensible and reasonable, what do you think the reaction would have been? Well, if they listen to the message, you might say, I want to be baptized. I want to become a Christian. Or maybe they didn't listen very well. And most of us, I think, have probably had that experience. We were kind of half tuned in, half tuned out. And we came to the conclusion we should have been tuned in. We were not tuned in. So I wasn't listening, or I should have listened better. Let's talk some more. Let's get some additional information. So these signs, they were used to coordinate with the preaching. And God gave the apostles exactly what they needed. You see that expressed quite well in Mark chapter 16 and verse 20. When we think about signs today, what do signs do? A road sign.
Inform.
Oh, okay. They inform. Any other words there? That's a good one.
They warn you.
Well, they warn you.
They advertise.
Advertise. And how about direct? They are directing you to something. You know, Bugville, you know, 10 miles down the road, or restaurant this way, gas station this way. They're pointing you to something. And that's what these signs in the New Testament were designed to do. They were designed to point people to the fact that a Messiah, a Savior, had come into the world, and the apostles, other people who had the gifts, they were spokesmen for this person, and they were trying to point people to God. Final thought, the skillet. And the question was asked, what was the sermon about? Oh, I don't remember. What was practical about? I don't remember. Only thing I remember is that he was waving around a skillet. Well, you know, that was effective as far as a memorable illustration, but maybe not so effective as far as if you can't remember the point. If you can't even remember the basic gist of it, all you can remember is the skillet. How effective was it at the end of the day?
Not
very good. And there have been some other guys who have done some interesting things. Sometimes some interesting things end up to be some bad things. I mean, after the illustration, after the sermon service are over, you think that was not a good thing for that guy to do. It's like people today, they can do some things that really stand out, but not stand out in a good way. You can't kind of remember the connection. So Jesus, he offered some illustrations, and he offered some illustrations that the people could connect to life, and they could remember the illustration and remember the point. And ideally, for the people who preach and teach, that's the best way to go. Steve?
I don't want to get too far. Of course, I think of these TV commercials, radio commercials. You could remember it years and years later, but you don't know what they were selling, and it may not. Maybe it wasn't that effective, so maybe they got to change it and hammer home what we're selling or what we're going to do for you.
That is a superb illustration. I'm not a marketer, but I would imagine that the people in the marketing department, that's always their challenge. We want, you know, if you're selling soap, you're selling hamburgers, you're selling cars, whatever that is. Number one, you want the right slogan. You want the right image. You want something that's going to burn itself into the minds of people, but you don't want it to burn itself into the minds of people and then they can't remember who it was for. I mean, that's the worst kind of marketing disaster, right? This is the cute jingle. Oh, where did you hear that? Well, I don't know. I just remember the jingle. No, no, no. Bad idea.
I think one of the most, something popped in my head, one of the most effective ads, I think, and it's memorable, is Discount Tire. It's about 30 seconds long. You see a lady tossing a tire through the window. Well, that gets your attention. One, it's memorable. Two, you know, it's about tires because you store tires.
Who has the best insurance commercial?
You just got to remember Discount, which
yes.
Tire dealer it is.
Who has the best insurance commercial?
Geico.
Why?
Because it's memorable.
Okay.
You have a mascot. You have a message. But you have different ways of approaching the same message.
Who does Flo represent?
Progressive.
Okay. Now, I can remember Flo. Progressive was not right there on the tip of my tongue.
The colors, but Allstate also uses those same as Allstate.
Yeah, okay. You're in good hands with Allstate. Now, isn't that a brilliant marketing? Because again, you got the slogan, you're in good hands, and then bang.
You've got the same thing with Liberty.
Yes.
You got the same thing with
yes.
You can remember that. Okay, who's what's the insurance is it trying to sell? It's Liberty. Down the years, you know,
they say it over and over.
Are you going to turn on Liberty or are you going to remember the bird and the man?
Mm-hmm. Insurance. We are farmers. Hey! 40 years ago. The man. Hey!
Culligan.
Yeah, anybody remember that? Hey, Culligan man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. So, like I say, they were able to strike that balance where they've got the illustration, and they've also got the company name. So if you ever are in the position where you're trying to make an illustration for someone, if you can strike that balance, that's what Jesus did, you get an A+. But if they can just remember, oh yeah, that was the insurance guy, I can't remember who it was, it's a failure. That it? Okay. All right, enough of that. Let's go back and see what else we've got as far as our teaching methods. Can they also vary as far as place and circumstance? Preaching, teaching, sorry. Place, good question if we're not on the same page here. Place and circumstance, can they vary a little bit? Might that change it?
Sure.
Gary, we'll start with you.
In here versus out in the barn versus street corner preachers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the message any different? No. I mean, we might be more formal in here, perhaps as, you know, attire. Maybe, you know, we're in pews out there. You might have some people kind of standing. If we had people, you know, come in here, let's just think about that for a second. We have people out in the barn standing. You know, we've got an afternoon service. Anybody think twice about that?
No.
I don't think anybody would. Maybe even munching on a couple crackers and sandwiches. But if we had a Sunday morning service in here and we had some people standing, you know, on the sides, what would your perception be?
Hopefully it's because it's so full they can't.
Well, but it's not. But yes, hopefully you're right. Hopefully that would be standing room only. But let's say we've got, you know, half the auditorium filled and we've got some people standing. What would your perception be?
Why are they standing?
Well, okay, I think why is the first question. Anything else?
I'm watching for the blue light.
do we have a security issue? I think that's probably the second question that's going to be going through the minds of people. So it's interesting that when we think about preaching, the circumstances may be different. It might be the place. It might be the dress. It could be the presentation. Sometimes it might be, you know, we've had people here, as far as meetings, we've had some people stand right there. Or they've actually, they decided that they might not be in the pulpit for a reason. Maybe it's a health reason, they can't get up there, or maybe they wanted to give, in their mind, maybe a little more informal presentation, whatever it might be. So there is a lot of flexibility with preaching. Gary?
I think if the auditorium's not full, people are standing at I would think maybe they're just watching as opposed to participating, and I would wonder about that too.
Yes, very good. Okay, anything else you want to add?